This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you been struggling lately? Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, difficulty with a relationship, or just suffering from low self-esteem. If so, then BetterHelp wants to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You get to talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network, and they give you access to help that may not be available in your area. You just need to fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And there's a special offer to Nowhere to Be Found listeners. You'll get 10% off of your first month, but only if you go through the link or type in betterhelp.com/NTBF for Nowhere to Be Found. That's better, HELP.com/NTBF. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And you can find the link in our show notes and on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Oregon Wild Rice. Oregon Wild Rice is a local company that we are so excited to be partnering with. The Langdon family have been farming in Harrisburg for approximately 120 years. They started out as a farm to sustain their growing family and then grew into commercial farming. 80 years ago, they acquired 140 acres with heavy clay soil. For 75 years, the family had drained the land and tried to grow grass seed with varying results. 5 years ago, they decided to stop fighting the land. They moved some dirt, built berms on two sides, and within 3 days, they had rice paddies. So far, they have not had to add water to the paddies. Oregon Wild Rice grows in 100% Oregon rain. I love that this rice is locally grown and sustained right here in Harrisburg. It's important to know where your food comes from these days. Here in the Pacific Northwest, it doesn't get any better than Oregon Wild Rice. I got to try their wild rice recently, and I can honestly say that I've never seen rice like this before. I'm genuinely a picky eater and greet most foods with skepticism, but I was blown away. Their rice is a healthy, delicious, better choice side dish. So thanks again to Oregon Wild Rice for sponsoring tonight's episode. I'll post the link to their website in our show notes so you can check them out. I'm your host, Amanda Papineau, and this is Nowhere to Be Found. Months ago, as I was wrapping up the Michael Bryson case, I watched the Rick Dancer show, where Tina and Parrish Bryson were joined by the father of another local missing person, Fauna Fry. Fauna's dad, John, had one of the most heartbreaking stories I've ever heard, and in that moment, I knew I'd found my next case. It's been almost 8 months since 45-year-old Fauna Fry went missing from Grants Pass, Oregon, which is a little over 2 hours south from where I live in Eugene. So back to the drawing board I went. I'll admit, I've been so used to Michael's case, where I was familiar with the small details and knew most of the key people involved, that it was a little jarring to go back to ground zero. This case is as bizarre as it gets, and Fauna's timeline leading up to her disappearance will have you scratching your head. But before we hear that, we need to hear the backstory. Her story before the story. Fauna's life has been a string of tragedies leading up to her disappearance. But I wanted to go back even further than that to get to know the real Fauna. So I reached out to her father, John, and I dove back into the chaos once again.
I kind of wanted to go back and have you tell me, like, what was Fauna like as a kid?
She was a really fun, happy kid. She loves animals. She used to like to cozy up with her her sister had ponies and horses when they were younger. Spent most of her time living in the country.
It's kind of an outdoorsy type of girl.
Definitely outdoorsy.
Yeah. And she's one of three, right? Where does she fall in line for the three kids?
She's a middle child.
Middle child. Okay. So older brother, younger sister, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So Mickey, I got to talk to Mickey a couple days ago. She's so sweet. All the girls that have been helping you have been so great and so sweet and easy to talk to. So definitely some good people to have on your side, it seems. But Mickey was kind of telling me a funny story, and she said, you know, you got to have John tell you the whole thing because I don't know it. But she tells me that Fauna's full name is Fauna Rosanna Half Moon Fry.
That's correct.
So I got to ask, how did she get the name Half Moon in there?
She was born in Arkansas, next to Piney Creek, outside, underneath the old black walnut tree.
Oh my goodness.
It was Half Moon.
Now there's, that is a unique story there. So then you decided to put that in there as a second middle name for her.
Correct.
And what are your other two children's full names?
My other daughter's name was Aurora. We called her Aura for short.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And
my son's name was Dallas River Fry.
They all kind of have a little nature-y theme going, don't they?
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Their mother and I were very much into that type of thing. Each one of us had different country experiences and then kind of lived in more of a city world and then wanted to get back to a country world. Of course, this was in the late 60s, early 70s.
When did you guys move to Oregon?
1977.
Okay, and what brought you out here?
Oh, it's a real long story. We started out in Chicago, moved to California, lived in Pacific Grove. That's where my son Dallas was born.
Okay.
And then we lived in a wonderful place right on the coast next to Asilomar, which is the smallest state park in California. Anyway, it was, even in those days, it was just too crazy and too expensive to try to get, like, some land or a homestead type of thing in California.
Sure.
So we ended up with another family going to Arkansas. And we bought a piece of property in Arkansas on the Little Red River, gorgeous piece of property. Totally wild, but, absolutely gorgeous. Like,
yeah.
Trout stream type of thing with gray rocks with water surging over it. And we built a little cabin there on the Little Red River and had a swimming hole below it. But pretty wild, and nobody'd lived anywhere near this piece of property for over 50 years. And so it was pretty much gone back. But anyway, we built a cabin there. I worked at a ranch around there for emotionally disturbed and handicapped kids. It was a big 2,000-acre cattle ranch.
Sounds cool.
We really couldn't make a living in Arkansas, and we kind of left the cabin unfinished and put the property up for sale. And some friends of ours lived in Portland, Oregon, so we moved there.
Hmm.
And then we started looking for property there and decided that we wanted to check out Southern Oregon. So we went down to Southern Oregon and found a place out there, a little 5-acre piece on Clear Creek, built a house there, kind of lived in it unfinished until it was finished type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
When we got some money, we finally finished it and ended up building a horse barn up there, and it turned out a nice little house.
Yeah, it sounds great.
5-acre piece, and we were backed up next to the Kalmiopsis Wilderness.
Yeah, that sounds really nice.
The girls, back in those days, it was a lot safer, and They would take their horses and just, they didn't have to go through a road or trailer them or anything. They could just take off into the Gamiapsis wilderness. And,
wow.
And so they did that.
Sounds like a dream.
Yeah. They hardly ever did anything like watch TV or anything. So the kids really liked that. And then different things happened and things just kind of moved in different directions and their mother and I got divorced.
Okay.
And I think that was particularly hard on the kids because it had been so tight to that time.
How old were they?
11, 12, and 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that how you ended up here in the Eugene area? Or?
Well, eventually, I built a couple more houses down there. That's what I've done all my life. I'm a builder.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids got involved in the business. And I did a large project down there for what used to be SOSC, which is now Southern Oregon University.
Okay.
And I didn't want to do any large projects anymore, so after the divorce and stuff, I kind of wanted to change the pace, so came up to Eugene. I knew some people up here. Kids moved up here. That was kind of tough on them because they were, you know, more separated from their mother.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it's tough.
They were at an age where it was hard for them to get down there themselves. Anyway, a few more years go by, and
And they went to Churchill, right?
Fauna did.
The Fauna did. Okay, I did too. That's why I was asking, because I'd talked to Mickey and Jenny, and, you know, they all went to school together. So where did Aura go?
She went to North Valley, because I skipped a stage for a while. For a few years, I moved back down to Grants Pass and built another house down there.
Oh, okay.
She and Fauna lived there, too, for a while.
Okay.
One of those years, Fauna, when I moved down, decided to stay up here. She was in her senior year to graduate.
And then for work, was she already at that point working for you?
Fauna worked several jobs, everything from Carl's Jr. to working at auto delivery places. And then she got more serious and she got her insurance license. And so she did that off and on for years and went to Colorado with that for a while. And then she kind of got homesick. And so she was like an early one to be able to take her work with her and work at home type of thing.
Nice.
Because her boss liked her so much that he was willing to let her do that. Yeah, she was always very friendly, affable, really was a great boost to any place she'd ever worked at, including for us. She also worked with, we did several houses together, the kids and I.
Mm-hmm.
Bono, she would have been a great real estate agent.
Oh, okay. But, I could see that based on what you've said.
But she always found our real estate. She was really great at that, you know, finding lots and pieces of property and stuff.
So pretty, you'd say pretty, like, responsible, kind of a hard worker.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Did she work a lot?
Yeah. She worked all the time.
Okay.
I guess having our own business, I've always been a workaholic.
Have you? Yeah. See, and so that, I think it kind of comes with the territory, but so was that how Fauna was, too?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. When she's not working, though, what kind of stuff does she like to do?
She's real big into hiking.
Okay.
She spent a lot of time with her different animals and her Labrador she got as a puppy died about a year ago.
Oh, I think I heard about that. Is that Shasta?
Yes.
Okay. So Shasta's, that's a really tough loss.
She's the yellow lab.
Okay.
And, all Shasta's life was play.
Oh.
And water.
Yeah, that's a lab for you.
Yeah. Fauna spent a lot of time doing that. And then we'd go on extensive hikes. you know, 20-mile hikes.
Oh, my. Okay, that's not a short walk. That's a...
No, you're pretty sore afterwards.
Yeah. So where, like, what's her... Does she have a hike that she does a lot? Like, what's her favorite spot?
Depends on where we were. When we were up, and or when she was up in Portland, her brother and I went up there all the time to work on her house up there.
Mm-hmm.
And just to visit, too, on weekend. Mm-hmm. And we would do the trails up around Mount Hood a lot.
Yeah, beautiful.
You know, even through the snow and stuff. You know, there's a lot of just gorgeous mountain meadows up there.
Yes. You know. What about here closer to town? She, what's like if she's, you know,
well, around Eugene, there's not as many good places to hike.
Yeah.
Everywhere from Oak Ridge to, you know, we used to do Mount June all the time because it's close to my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bohemia.
Okay, yeah.
Bohemia Mountain, you name it, but hiked it around this area.
Yeah, I just kind of started getting to know that area, like around Bohemia and stuff, when I was covering the Michael Bryson case, because that's right up there, and there's just a whole intricate area right. of trails. So yeah, you could do that again and again and again.
Yeah, her and Dallas used to also go down to Steamboat, which is down that way on the Umpqua.
Okay,
it's a little further south, but. It's actually is easier to get to is the top of Bohemia because of that terrible road that goes up to Bohemia. That's just like...
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So, yeah.
So really into hiking, animals, still kind of that outdoorsy girl type of stuff.
Yeah, did a lot of... her and her brother got into gold panning.
Oh, that's fun.
That. Yeah.
Did she ever get anything good?
A little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
I've always felt like it's kind of like fishing, you know, you're there for the experience, and if you catch something, great, but...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, so, you know, pretty happy childhood, it sounds like, and a little tough in the transitions of, you know, some different life changes and stuff for her, and then I know she's had, you know, quite a few... Big losses here in the last two decades, starting with her mother, is that right?
Yeah, her mother passed unexpectedly in 2004.
Jeez, so she was still pretty young. Teenage years, mm-hmm. maybe? Okay. And then her sister...
passed in 2006.
So just a couple years later, and they were extremely close, it sounds like, you know... Only a yep. couple years apart, and being the only two girls.
About a little over a year apart.
Oh, just a little over a year. Okay. Gosh, yeah, that's a double whammy right there that most people hopefully never have to experience, and for you as well.
So then when her brother passed last June 19th, it was, you know...
It's just unimaginable.
Himself, he was like the last one, and it was extremely traumatic.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And with Dallas, she disappeared pretty soon after he passed. Is that right?
10 days.
Man, yeah, I'm so sorry, John. I cannot imagine being in your position and just living this nightmare. It's, you can't really even put it into words.
No, I sure can't put it into words.
No, I bet not. So, if you can, I know it's pretty tough, but if you can just kind of walk me through, starting on the day that Fauna left, what happened?
Fauna was pretty well traumatized.
Yeah, of course.
And, I could see it building from the day that Dale passed, and I think she just needed to escape, and so she was planning on leaving, and then even left faster than she was planning on, and unexpectedly in the middle of the night.
She had already been planning to?
From her down in Grants Pass the next evening, and she was calling me from Motel 8, and that's the last that I heard from her.
And what did she say when she called?
Oh, she was pretty well disoriented. She said that, she told me she picked up a hitchhiker, and we went through all that.
Is that odd for her?
She was a very compassionate person, and she didn't judge people.
Okay, so you could kind of see it.
It was also unusual, you know, because she was talking about angels, and she was still pretty out there.
Okay. Disoriented. And what did you tell her when she told you all this?
Well, she was telling me how she hated staying at the motel, and I suggested to her that she could just get a place to, maybe she could just rent a little cabin somewhere.
Okay.
Chill for a while.
Yeah, kind of get off the grid.
Yeah, just to, you know, have a place to just decompress. She told me that that might be hard to do because of tourist season was beginning down there and that kind of thing.
Okay. So when you hang up with her, is she saying, I'll call you again or I'll check in with you some other time? Or is she kind of saying, I'm looking for a spot? How's she end it with you?
Well, I was asking her how I could get a hold of her.
Because she didn't have a phone with her.
Because after she disappeared, I was already worried about her.
Okay.
Well, I thought that she had her brother's telephone.
Okay.
Which was just a throwaway flip phone. But she said she didn't. She said she thought she lost it. And I thought that took it for granted she was calling from the hotel.
Okay.
And, it turns out I've checked that out, and I've been down there and talked to the people and looked at the bills and all this stuff, and they charge for telephone calls going out of the room if it's long distance, and she could not call from the hotel.
Okay.
And I think she had her brother's phone, but she told me that she either lost it or threw it away.
And if you were to call that number now, is it disconnected?
We tried a million times.
Oh, I'm sure.
We've tried to get it pinged by the police several times. And
sure.
For phone records, and the whole thing's a nightmare. Well, with FCC requirements and stuff like
yes.
that, the phone company won't even give you your own phone records.
Okay, so she says she's going to look for another place. We know now, based on, I'm not sure how, I think based on her credit card information that she booked,
We ask you in. It's kind of a play on words.
Oh, I see. Name.
If you put it all together, we ask you in.
Yeah. Kind of, I did not catch that before. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she makes
that. It's an old log cabin. lodge on the Rogue River with a bunch of individual cabins.
Perfect.
That used to be pretty rustic. But anyway, it's gotten kind of gentrified since.
Yeah.
And she made a reservation there. I think it was a week or so later I got her bank statements.
Right.
That were held there and it showed. Anyway, that's also the last time she used her credit card.
And is that, did she just book it for one night?
Correct.
Okay. So either way, her plan wasn't to stick around for too long. Let me ask you, when she said that
or if she liked it, she could have booked it more.
That's true. That's true.
It's even true that could have been a red herring.
Hmm. Before, you said that she kind of left impromptu in the middle of the night, but she had been planning on leaving anyways. What was her original plan?
Her plan was to go down and visit a couple of friends of her brother.
Okay. And then come right back home?
The plan wasn't focused that well.
Okay. So after
you... As far as I know.
After you get off the phone with her, you're pretty worried because of the things she's saying, and it just sounds like she's distraught.
Yeah, I was worried even the 24 hours after she left till she called me. I was extremely relieved that when she called, you know.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, at least she's okay.
Get a hold of her, but she didn't see seemed to want me to get a hold of her, and...
Okay. So, how did
she... She was angry with me from things that happened with the divorce and the separation, and there was things that came up in the days after Della's passed that, you know, she was holding me responsible for, and, you know, we were both in the state of shock.
Right, right. It's such a raw time to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
People that have never been through anything like that and not quite comprehend the unreality of it.
Right, right. Gosh, that's really tough. So when did you decide she was officially missing, or how did you decide she was officially missing?
Well, a couple of few days later, I was in a panic by then, and I drove down there.
Okay.
And I kind of looked at places where she could possibly be. I drove around and drove around. And then I thought to myself that this is totally insane. She could be half a mile away and being taking a left turn, and I could be taking a right turn.
Right.
And, you know, I have no way of getting a hold of her by phone, and, you know, unless I spot her car, you know, this guy's getting crazy. So then I came back here and called Oregon State Police.
Mm-hmm.
They told me that I had reported to the county where she went missing. So I did that, and then some records had to go back and forth, and then I think I went back down again and talked to the sheriff down there, and time went by, and they were kind of looking into it. I was searching all the time, and then we got a couple of false leads up in the McKenzie area, people that swear they spotted her, talked to her, and, you know, supposedly identified her Jeep and everything. So we spent weeks up in the McKenzie area looking for her, and then the fire happened, and then it seemed less likely that she was up there.
Right, because she would have been evacuated.
Correct.
Okay.
And other things. Other leads were falling apart, like some of the eyewitnesses weren't sure anymore.
Oh, boy.
So then the focus turned down to Southern Oregon again.
Okay.
And in between time, I got a private investigator, and he was going down there and meeting with the sheriff down there, and then the Jeep was found.
Once again, I'm covering an open case, which puts limitations on how much people can say. The police have asked the family to keep certain details of the case confidential, and I absolutely respect that and only want to aid, not hinder this investigation. If you have any information on Fauna's whereabouts or information regarding her disappearance, please call the Josephine County Sheriff's Department, 541-474-5117. Or you can leave an anonymous tip on the tip line at 541-359-5638. John is offering a substantial reward for anyone who brings forward information that leads to finding Fauna. To stay up to date on our episodes, subscribe to Nowhere to be Found wherever you download your podcasts.
Next time on Nowhere to be Found.
It just kind of evolved where I think she was just jumping out of her skin. She needed to do something. And that's why I said that the We Ask You In could even have been a hearing. She was in the headspace where she didn't have anything to lose. Yeah.
Okay.
She was in the company of someone else. And we're still following that up.
We've been asked how our listeners can contribute to the show, so we set up an account with Patreon. Check out the link in our show notes if you're interested in supporting our cause. You can also find it on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com.